carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gonna throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, side of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Johnson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boy.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Miles, everyone.
With Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It was good to get a sweat going and get the guys moving around. And we know, you know, the first game after the break is never an easy one. But we're going to try and come out as hard as we can tomorrow.
The bye week is over, ladies and gentlemen. We survived it. Congratulations. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning via the iHeartRadio app and on TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio for the next 3 hours of hockey talk, getting you set for the Jets and the Flames. They'll do battle at 2 o'clock this afternoon in Calgary. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com. If you send us a tweet or you send us a text and we like it, we might even read it on air. That's just the kind of people we are here at the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, Dave, Ezzy, good to see you both on this Saturday morning.
Hello.
Hello. The bye week, as I mentioned, is over. The Jets back in action. They were on the practice ice yesterday getting set for their afternoon matinee in Calgary. And, you know, here we are on January the 20th. 36 games to go until the regular season is concluded, and it's now sort of the week off is sort of a nice sort of opportunity for everyone to take a deep breath, recalibrate, and put pedal to the metal for the next 36 games.
Yeah, forget about that game last Saturday in Minnesota. It wasn't a great game for the Jets.
Nope.
And, you know, for the Calgary Flames, you know, you mentioned this on Wednesday's show, Drew.
Yeah.
You know, they go into their bye week, you know, absolutely red hot. They probably would have preferred to keep playing, right, and keep winning. They've won 7 games in a row. And so, you know, they have to get right back to work, the Jets. And, you know, right now there's a 3-way tie for first in the Central Division as far as points go. And, you know, this isn't a really important upcoming 2-game set here. You know, you're playing a really red-hot Flames team, and then you got the Canucks tomorrow night. So obviously, you know, the Flames game is the one that you say would be harder, but you've got 4 games in 6 days, Drew,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and you got the Sharks and the Ducks, and they're playing good hockey right now. So, you know, you've had this nice bye week, and, you know, the guys get to go on vacation or, you know, have a little family time. But with 2 games coming up here back-to-back and 4 games in 6 days, you don't really have a lot of time to, you know, relish the last 5 days because you have to get right back to work. And this is a really important set because you've got the All-Star break after that. So you're going to get some rest and you're going to hopefully get some bodies back. It looks like Adam Lowry will come back next week in California, either against San Jose or Anaheim. But unfortunately for some other players like Steve Mason,
yeah,
you know, they're going to be out longer. But this next set of 4 games for me is absolutely crucial because you didn't get any points in those road games in Chicago and St. Paul.
And the Jets, of course, you said 4 games, and then there's the All-Star break. So you can go hard for the next 4 and 6 nights. That's the way the schedule breaks out. And then next weekend, again, you get to take a breather. I mean, not if you're Blake Wheeler or Connor Hellebuck, of course, but it's certainly not as stressful as it would be in the heart of the regular season. Dave, Michael Hutchinson, going to be the Jets' backup goaltender for the foreseeable future as Steve Mason has suffered another concussion, his second concussion in the last 2 months. So his nightmare season continues, unfortunately, as the guy who was ostensibly going to be the Jets' number one goaltender at the beginning of the year continues to struggle through injuries and inconsistent play as a result. Hutchinson, in speaking with the media, that was the first time he's really spoken to the media or had to answer difficult questions, quote-unquote difficult questions. I wouldn't say they're that difficult. But first time he's actually been, you know, had the microphone and the bright lights put in front of him since he was sent down to the Moose at the end of training camp. He certainly wasn't happy about that demotion when it happened, and he spoke yesterday candidly, somewhat candidly, about his thoughts.
It's a complete roller coaster ride, but, you know, it's, like I said, you can only control what you can control, and that's just taking it one day at a time right now. And right now I'm up here with the Jets, and I'm here to do whatever they need me to do. And, you know, if I get a chance to play, you know, I'm going to help them, try and help them win a game or two.
You're a free agent, I think, this summer. How much are you looking forward to that chance?
Not really thinking about that at all right now. You know, it's one of those things that it's been my mindset all season. It's, you know, you can't look too far in advance, or else, you know, you kind of losing sight of what you need to do. So, you know, I'll cross the bridge in the summer when I come to it. But right now, you know, I'm just here to help any team that I'm on, whether it's the Moose or Jets or wherever, to, you know, help them win games and do my job.
And this is the first interview you've done since, so can you explain why that is?
I'm not going to get into that right now.
No? Were you afraid what you'd say?
No, I have my own reasons, and I'll talk about that a little later. But right now, you know, I'm not here to, you know, be a focal point or anything like that. I'm just here to show up and do my job and, you know, help teams win games.
I would say that the chip on Michael Hutchinson's shoulder isn't even a chip. I think it's a boulder that he's carrying on his shoulder. He still sounds pissed off, for lack of a better word, regarding his demotion at the beginning of the season. He's going to get an opportunity now to be the backup goaltender, and in a back-to-back situation that you have, it would not be a surprise to see him in action this weekend for the Winnipeg Jets. Dave, you spend, I mean, as much time around the Moose as anybody in the city, probably, you know, definitely more than most people. You know, have you seen that disappointment? Have you seen that sort of chip on his shoulder manifest itself in Michael Hutchinson's play this year with the Moose?
Okay, well, just one quick qualifier. He has spoken to Mitch Peacock, and he's done a couple of interviews with Mitch Peacock. So,
right.
I mean, he has spoken. He just hasn't spoken with the general media.
Right.
But he has spoken to Mitch on camera a couple of times. You know what? Look, it hasn't manifested itself amongst his fellow players. None of the players talk about it. None of them seem to care. The coaching staff is aware, but they're not allowing it to kind of impact the game. So the fact is he's clearly mad, and there's an anger that, you know, I mean, you don't see it in his demeanor when you see him walking around the rink. He's fine. He'll say hello, that sort of thing. But it's clearly there's an agitation within him because he feels that he was kind of unfairly targeted, would be my conjecture, because of course I haven't spoken with him. But you know, and it'll be interesting to see, because the truth is, especially with the way the team is kind of constructed this year, I think that they're better to play defense in front. You know, it wasn't all on Mike Hutchinson. It looks always like it's the worst, because when you're the goalie, the goal goes through you. But the fact of the matter is, and I think he would probably admit he wasn't good last year, but neither was the team a lot, oftentimes, defensively in front of him. So that was definitely a factor. And perhaps if he gets into some games this year, you know, he'll see a different structure with this team. Now, again, I think he's definitely played with a chip on his shoulder throughout the season, and I think that's probably helped him, because, you know, he did win back-to-back player of the or goalie of the month for November and December, so that's not exactly a small feat. Went a number of games without a regulation loss. But, I mean, to me, you know, I think to get away from this notion of being a distraction, I would have, if I was Michael Hutchinson, would have simply said, you know what, I was upset when I was sent down. I really just wanted to kind of focus on my game, not really discuss, you know, the circumstances surrounding it. And he went on that incredible run. Once that run sort of ended, he probably should have just talked to the media and got it over with, and kind of like the Band-Aid, you know, rip it off, mm-hmm. have that discussion, and then don't become a situation. Now, he's with the Jets. He's not going to have that opportunity, because the fact of the matter is, guys who don't like, you know, generally talk to the media aren't loving to jump in front of a camera have to do it. So, you know, when you're a guy who's not a 10-year, you know, NHL veteran who doesn't have Stanley Cups behind his name, you're not going to have that same leeway. You have to talk to the media. You know, they're just not going to say, well, we're going to make Dustin Byfuglien or Toby Enstrom talk, but we're not going to make you talk. So, like, you're not going to get that sort of consideration when you're in the NHL. So at the same time, they're going to force him to have a conversation, and they did.
And Dave, you just mentioned earlier, you know, Michael Hutchinson wins player of the month, goalie. He's been the best goalie in the AHL.
All-star goaltender.
All-star goalie, right? Yeah. So if he's playing with a chip on his shoulder, or how you said it, Drew, he's playing with a boulder on his shoulder, or if he's playing mad, True North loves it, because he's playing really well, right? So he should continue to play mad, and he should continue to play with a chip on his shoulder. His goals against average in the AHL is under 2. Mm-hmm. His save percentage is .942, right? So he's having a great season, and I give him credit for speaking to the media at least answering the questions yesterday. I mean, he has his reasons for not speaking to the media, aside from Mitch Peacock, as Dave mentioned earlier. And, you know, as we talked about at the beginning of the segment, Drew, you've got back-to-back games here against the Flames and Canucks, four games in six days. There's a good chance Hellebuck plays all four of these games, or at the very least, I believe he'll play three of the games.
Mm-hmm.
But Hutchinson does have a chance here to get his first NHL game of the season and, you know, show us that, you know, what he's doing in the American Hockey League is no fluke. And I don't believe it is a fluke. I think Hutchinson's a great goalie. And you forget what he did when he came to Winnipeg, you know, 4 years ago, and what he did in that 2014-15 season, winning 21 games. He's a good goaltender, and he's not an old guy by any stretch of the imagination. He's 27 years old. So this is a guy that wants to have a lengthy pro career, preferably in the NHL. But again, it's unfortunate that earlier this season, you know, he wasn't talking to the media, but at the very least, you know, he stepped in front of that microphone, spoke to the media, explained himself to a certain degree, you know, and answered some again, as you mentioned, they weren't the hardest questions, but at least, you know, Paul Friesen of the Winnipeg Sun asked the questions. And, you know, I think it's good for Hutchinson that he's been recalled and he's probably going to get an opportunity to play an NHL game, something that he hasn't got to do yet this year.
Absolutely. It's going to be an opportunity for him. Like we said, we have the back-to-back situation this weekend, today in Calgary, and then at home to the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow night. In terms of the lineup, we sort of spoke about it briefly. Adam Lowry was on the ice for practice yesterday in a non-contact jersey. He's not an option for this weekend, but Paul Maurice holds out hope that potentially on the road trip through San Jose and Anaheim, he could rejoin the team. Sean Mathias, not on the ice for practice, so he's still out. Steve Mason's concussed. We know he's out. Brandon Tanev returns to the Jets lineup this afternoon, scheduled to play on a line with Andrew Kopp and Joel Armia. Jack Roslovic got recalled alongside Michael Hutchinson, so he's going to play in that fourth line role and on the second power play unit.
Yeah, Drew, so really the only changes that you're going to see this afternoon against the Flames from the last game against the Wild is, of course, you're going to see Brandon Tanev back on the third line, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and Michael Hutchinson is backing up Connor Hellebuck. So really, those are the only two major changes.
That's right. You're going to, and then, of course, the big unanswered question, and still, you know, probably another week, 2 weeks out, is the return of Mark Scheifele to the
right.
Winnipeg Jets
yeah,
lineup.
And they talked about it yesterday, and they said he said coming along, he's still in the middle of his time frame, so he is right where we think he should be.
Yeah.
That's what Coach Marie said yesterday.
That's exactly right. And it just so happened that it was never the Jets' bye week, and then the All-Star break landed in and around the injury to some extent mitigate the damage of losing Mark Scheifele out of your lineup, at least in terms of the number of games played by the team. When we come back, we'll look at the ultra-competitive Central Division. It was written about in the Free Press. Mike McIntyre wrote about the ultra-competitive Central Division. We'll look ahead to the remainder of the year in the Central. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
For it. Yossi with it. Saucered it over. Ekholm off to Turris. One-timer. Score! The Predators are blazing hot. Another power play goal. This time it's Kyle Turris. It's a 4-0 game.
The Predators are blazing hot. 6-2-2 in the last 10. Winners of 4 in a row. With their victory on Thursday night over the Arizona Coyotes, they leapfrogged the Winnipeg Jets into first place in the Central Division. Sort of expected that it was going to happen during the Jets' bye week, and then it did on Thursday night. They're a point up on the Jets. Of course, the Predators still have two games in hand. The Jets tied now with the St. Louis Blues for second spot in the Central Division, but the Jets have two games in hand on the Blues. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They have great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check them out in the Cordon Village Mall. Central Division, as we know and have discussed really ad nauseum for the last 5 years, is the best division in hockey. Continues to be that way this year. And it's,
I think the Metropolitan Division, though, you could make an argument that that is very close.
Very close. But
to
the
Central, if not just as good.
We did the comparison a few weeks ago.
In fact, we did a segment about that.
Yes, we did a segment about that a few weeks back. And it, the as competitive as the Metropolitan Division is.
Was I there for that segment?
You were
here, like your
like my body,
your
was
body
here.
Was
yeah.
here. Where your spirit is, or where your brain is at any given day, I can't tell you.
You're having an out of body experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I sold my soul to Bernstein's Deli.
Well,
so.
Naturally, for
my soul is at the deli.
Yes. Okay. Well, there you go. It all works out then.
I sold my soul for one sandwich, by the way.
Yeah,
just one.
Just like when Bart sold his soul to Milhouse.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, probably a poor decision on your part. Anyways, the Central Division, it looks like it's going to qualify five teams for the Western Conference playoffs like they have most every year. Not last year, as it happened. It was a bit of a down year for the Central last year.
Sorry, by the way, Drew. I thought there was a three-way tie. Nashville actually went up by a point. I guess I missed that extra point.
That's okay. You're entitled to make minor errors of that regard without being taken out and tarred and feathered. We might tar and feather you for other reasons, but we'll get through those through the show before that happens. You know, the team that's most amazing to me in the Central Division right now that is sort of flying still a little bit under the radar is the Colorado Avalanche. What the Avalanche have been doing since the new year, well, they've winners of 8 games in a row. They're 9-1 in their last 10, and they're now into the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. Only a couple points behind the Dallas Stars with 3 games in hand. The Colorado Avalanche are going to be a force to be reckoned with down the stretch here for the Winnipeg Jets and all the teams in the Central Division.
Yeah, Drew, I'm not prepared to say that the Avalanche are a Stanley Cup contender, but they're certainly a playoff contender. Oh. And you just mentioned it. I mean, if you win 8 games in a row in today's NHL, I mean, you're going to move up the standings. And to me, what's probably the most surprising about this division is the winner of the division last year is last in the division right now, the Chicago Blackhawks with 50 points. So, I mean, there isn't any team that's out of it right now. And, you know, when you're talking about the Avalanche, I mean, their top line of Gabriel Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen, and Nathan MacKinnon has been absolutely sensational. We talked about it, I think it was last week, about Nathan MacKinnon, you know, getting a lot of hype for the Hart Trophy, Dave. But the point is, I mean, this is going to be a dogfight for the rest of the season. It's already been a dogfight. We saw the Jets just play 2 of their division rivals, and that's why the Jets were so upset that they didn't get any points in those games, because they know that these teams have caught up to them. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Wild and Hawks haven't caught up to them completely, but Minnesota's only 6 points back. Dallas is quietly only 3 points back of the Jets. You mentioned Colorado's won 8 in a row. Well, Dallas has only lost 3 games in regulation in their last 10. They're 6-3-1. They're playing some good hockey. So, I mean, this division is so close. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I think there's a good chance there will be 5 teams coming out of this division just because right now, I mean, you got to think, you know, that Minnesota and Chicago are going to make a big push here. I wouldn't count them out. We just talked about it. They're only Minnesota's tied and Chicago's only 3 points back. So, as you mentioned, you know, Colorado probably is the biggest surprise team. I thought Colorado would be last in this division. But again, you know, they've traded Matt Duchene, Drew, and it seems like, you know, a big weight has been lifted off the team's shoulders, and they're playing some really good hockey. Jared Bednar, I think, deserves a lot of credit and, you know, should be a Jack Adams candidate, especially if they end up making the playoffs.
I would agree with that, Dave. If you look at the, you know, the schedules from now until the end of the regular season, the Jets play 21 of their remaining 36 games against playoff teams. So they've certainly done well thus far in earning points, but to continue on the pace that they've been playing, they're going to earn it by defeating and getting points against some high-quality opponents and not the also-rans of the NHL. I mean, the advantage to be playing in the Pacific Division or to be playing in the Atlantic Division this year is immense. I mean, you have such bad teams in those two divisions that the good teams in those divisions just get to beat up on their weak sisters and what I would describe as, to some extent, artificially pad just how good they actually may be.
Yeah, that's a good point, Drew. I think the advantage for the Jets is they've played a lot of road games already. I believe they've played 26 road games and 21 at home or something like that. So they've got a number of home games still.
21 at home, 15 on the road for over the next 36. So the majority of their games are at home from now until the end.
Yeah, especially towards the end of February and into March, we're going to be at the Bell MTS Place quite a bit. So, and the truth is, if you look at most of the Central teams, they've all made hay at home, and with the exception of Nashville, have been rather middling on the road. So that's probably an advantage for Winnipeg, is that they've played so well in their home rink. They've managed to secure only three regulation losses in Winnipeg. So I think that's going to stand Winnipeg up very well if they can continue that sort of home dominance that we haven't seen for the last few years. But you know what? The fact of the matter is, if you want to be a playoff team and if you want to be a contender the way some people are now discussing the Winnipeg Jets, you know, recently Don Cherry talked about it, Pierre Maguire talked about it, a lot of pundits from outside the marketplace are talking about the Winnipeg Jets as not just a playoff contender, but a Stanley Cup contender potentially. And if you want to be that, and if you want to be talked in that vein, then you have to be able to beat the good teams. And you can't just beat up on the teams that, like, the Arizona Coyotes and the Buffalo Sabres. You have to be able to beat some of your big competition. So it's going to be a good test for the Jets, especially with a lineup that's still not completely healthy. But, I mean, that's what it is when you want to be a contender, is that you have to be able to beat everyone. So I think it'll be a good test, as you said, Drew, but I think it's probably one that this team is up for.
And the Jets don't have any games within their division for a couple of weeks. Their next game is at home against Colorado. In their own division, but that just shows you that, you know, you lose those two games against Chicago and Minnesota, and you know your window just it gets a little bit smaller there. Your cushion that you had in the standings has closed, right? We talked about it. Nashville's up by a point right now. St. Louis is tied with the Jets, 59 points, and you have teams like Colorado and Minnesota pressing right now. Chicago, they're not going to go away. I don't care what anybody says. Corey Crawford might be done for the season or he's out right now, but I just wouldn't count that team out. Any team that has Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, I just wouldn't count them out. So the point is, you have the entire division in the playoff race right now here in mid to late January, and it's going to be really exciting because it looked like, you know, the Jets were almost running away with the division at one point, and Nashville just keeps having those games in hand. So, you know, it's going to be a really important stretch here. And then those games that Dave talked about, you have 10 games in a row coming up at home from the end of January till, you know, what is it, February 20th. And you've got some games in division. You've got some games out of your division, out of conference. Mm-hmm. But the toughest part of the schedule is definitely over for the Jets.
That 10-game homestand.
In the sense of the travel, yeah, and the road games and
sure,
all of that.
The 10-game homestand is really something that's unheard of. I mean, I don't know the last time an NHL team had a 10-game homestand.
It's basically a month at home.
From January 30th, I think, like you said, through February 20th, it's almost every second night they play at home. And this is a Jets team, as we've said. It's been absolutely terrific on home ice. Dave, you mentioned they've only got three regulation losses at home. If you continue that streak and that stretch of play during that 10-game homestand, and you continue to bank the points, you go 8-1-1 on that homestand or whatever it might be, The games after that, so what you have left at that point in time, you play four this week, then you got the 10 at the home, so that's 14 games. Doing some quick math in my head, you know, the 22 games you have left after that homestand are, I mean, you should be pretty home, cool, and free if you do well on that 10-game homestand.
Yeah, Dave, and their winning percentage might go down a little bit. But the point is, they've been so good at home, one of the best home teams in the league. I believe they're second in the league at home. I think it's Vegas is number one, if I'm not mistaken. I think the Jets are second. So, I mean, yeah, absolutely, Drew. I mean, having those games at home are crucial. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, what the Jets have to focus on here, I mean, they can't just say, we don't have to win many of these games on the road because we know we're going to win all of our games at home. That's not how they think. But certainly knowing that you've been absolutely rock solid at home, winning basically 90% of your games at home, you know that coming up in February, you have a good opportunity to still compete for the Central Division. And that's what they're doing right now. They want to win the Central Division. It's not like it was 3 years ago back in 2015. The Jets are hoping to limp into the playoffs. Let's be honest, they limped into the playoffs then. But now, because they've had a taste of that Central Division lead, they want to stay there.
Yeah, and I think from my perspective that you look at this team and you're thinking to yourself, this is why those games in October and November are so critical. And we always talk about it early in the season. It seems almost crazy to be talking about how important it is to get those early wins and banking points. But now when you look at the Central Division and how tight it is, you see just how critical those games were to the success overall of this team for the whole season. So, again, as Ezzy just said, and he's 100% right, you can't coast to the playoffs because of where you are right now. But if you're the Jets, and realistically, if you would have just received 1 or 2 points, you'd be still tied for first in the Central, having had your five-day break. That's not a bad place to be for this team. So, again, getting some players back, you really just need to survive these next 4 games. You're going to have the All-Star break. You're going to have, like I said, you'll probably most likely have Adam Lowry back. You can have who else is injured?
Mark Scheifele.
Well, you're not going to have Mark Scheifele back, I don't think, but he'll be close. So the point is, if you survive without your number one center for that long, you're still in the mix, I mean, that's a pretty good place to be for Winnipeg, getting Mark Scheifele back and going forward for the rest of the season.
Coming up next, we continue the Winnipeg Jets talk with Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 12. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1299. The standard messaging rates do apply. And our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Ted Wyman. You know Ted from his work with the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, my friends. How are you?
Doing very well. Ted, how about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. Just home from a little Mexican holiday, so getting right back into it here. And obviously a big stretch run coming up for the Jets.
Absolutely. You know, it's sort of a weird schedule, Ted, in that, you know, they had the bye week, and so they've been off since last Saturday's game in Minnesota. They come back, and they have these 4 games in 6 nights, and then they take another, you know, 4 or 5 day break with the All-Star game. So sort of a lull in the season right now for the Jets. You know, how do you think that, you know, obviously they like the fact that they get the opportunity to be refreshed and everything else, but do you think these sort of odd scheduling of, you know, 4 games in the span of really, you know, 2 weeks or so might impact the momentum that they had going for them?
Well, I suppose it could, but I would think that this break here is probably a little more problematic for Calgary. They came in on a 7-game winning streak, and then they got to take these 5 days off, and we all know the records teams have had coming off the 5-day break. So, you know, the Jets were on a 2-game losing streak going in, so I think it gives them a chance more to refresh and be ready to go. I looked at this January schedule for the Jets and said, boy, the way they've been playing, what an opportunity this January schedule is, because it's nothing like what they're used to. They've been cramming so many games into short periods of time over the last few years, especially last season. And then they had a ton of games just before Christmas, and they were tired, they were banged up, there was no question. Here they've got a month where it's really spread out. They don't have that many games. They've got really good opportunities to get rest. I see these 4 games coming up before the All-Star break as a very, very important part of the season for the Jets to see, you know, where they're going to go here as the season goes on. Because if you've got this kind of rest, you've got to take advantage of it.
Ted, sticking with these next 4 games coming up here, yesterday the Jets recalled Michael Hutchinson and Jack Roslovic from the Moose, and we talked about it during the first segment. Michael Hutchinson finally addressed the media, and when you look at these next 2 games coming up here back-to-back and the 4 games in 6 days, do you expect Michael Hutchinson to get one of these 4 starts, or maybe it's possible Connor Hellebuyck gets all 4 starts, and do you expect Jack Roslovic to be deployed similarly to the way he was deployed prior to the mandatory 5-day break?
Yes, on Roslovic. And on Hutchinson, you would think that it would be a pretty good opportunity to put him in on Sunday against Vancouver. But as Paul Maurice said yesterday, it's not your typical back-to-back because the Jets play in the afternoon today and then back in the evening tomorrow. It's sort of a day-and-a-half break. So as a coach, I think he'd almost always default to going with a different guy on the second day. But he sees this one a little differently. Could depend a bit on how Hellebuyck plays today. This is a big game against a Calgary team that's playing so well and has played well against the Jets. And I think you got to make sure you get your points right now. It's so incredibly tight, you guys. I can't believe, you know, I went away And I thought, I was, you know, obviously keeping an eye on everything from where I was on holiday, but every day I'd look, man, these standings are just getting tighter and tighter. And the Jets are 1 point out of first place, but how many? Six out of, well, being out of the playoffs? It's kind of amazing at this point in the season. So, again, it's always going to be about getting points, as many games as you possibly can. You can't really have any streaks of losses, and they've already lost two in a row here. They haven't lost three in a row outright this season before. They did lose a third game in overtime, but this has been a signature of their season that they haven't let that happen, and it'll be very interesting to see if they can keep that going today.
Teddy, there's some talk about the Jets looking for a center, but you know we're still a ways away from the trade deadline. Do you anticipate the Jets just promoting from the Manitoba Moose internally as opposed to looking externally?
Well, I know I had that interview with Chevy just before Christmas, and I asked him those questions specifically, and he certainly sounded like he would be open to making moves, but he felt like they were comfortable with the idea of promoting from within, that they had that depth on the farm to be able to deal with it. And for the most part, in the first half of the season, it seemed like that was working for them. They were able to bring guys in, plug and play, and still be pretty strong. I think they're good on the back end. It's pretty obvious that Sherratt and Pullman can handle themselves. But you can never be too much depth if you're getting into a playoff drive. And the thing that I look at, guys, is that what's everybody else going to do? If all these teams are just as good or very close to as good as the Jets, it's hard to say that even though Chicago's not in the playoffs right now, are they really that much different from the Jets? They beat the Jets twice. The Jets say they've had a hard time handling them. It's pretty obvious to me that most teams that are in this are going to be taking a shot at it and realizing that with the parity of things, anybody has a chance. Any one of those 16 teams to make the playoffs is going to have a chance to take a run. And so you're going to have to make some moves to be in that class. And I think that if the Jets sit there and watch and everybody else makes moves and they don't, there's going to be big trouble. They're going to have to do a couple of things here, I think, to keep pace with everybody else.
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. You know, Ted, you mentioned, you know, that you know, they might have to do something else. I was reading Elliot Friedman's column this weekend. He talks about how, you know, the young players for the Jets are really stepping up and making an impact. The Kyle Connors, the Nikolai Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, Patrick Laine, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as you sit here and as the games get, you know, theoretically they get more important for the rest of the season, they maybe get more difficult and the grind gets a little bit harder. Do you see, you know, any players in particular that you think need to maybe give a little bit more to step their games up as the season gets more difficult?
Well, that's a tough question to really pinpoint anyone in particular. You know, I think there's always been some questions throughout the season as to the two-way play of the of Patrick Laine. Obviously, he hasn't quite learned the defensive aspect of the game as well as he is as an offensive player. But the guy's a top-line player. He's playing with Wheeler. I think he's done pretty well. I don't see a ton of issues there with the Jets. They when they were fully healthy up front, they were obviously a pretty solid four-line team. You guys saw how well they were able to roll four lines and how well the team was able to produce points from each line. The guys are going to have good times and bad times throughout a season, but I you know, there's not a ton of weaknesses there. But you still have to say, we could be a little bit better when you're coming up to the trade deadline. There's always going to be something. If there's just that great, you know, really solid player that comes up, that's out there that can provide you with the kind of depth that you need going forward, because Shoveldayoff said that at Christmas too. Although at the time they were missing Bufflin and Enstrom, he said, well, we haven't had any injuries up front. And that's going to happen. We're going to get those injuries and we're going to need to test our depth and see where we're at. And then, of course, right after Christmas, Mark Scheifele goes down, and then Adam Lowry not long after. And now you're really testing your depth without those two guys at center. I think, obviously, any team would miss those two guys. Lowry's been fantastic defensively and face-offs and going up against other teams' best. And Scheifele is the top center in this league. It's very hard to replace that. I think they've done okay, considering. But, again, you want to make sure you've got enough depth to deal with that if anything like that happens again.
Yeah, Ted, I agree with you 100%. I think Andrew Kopp has done a great job centering that third line. I want to go back to Jack Roslovic, and I was talking about Dave, talking with Dave about this off-air. You know, Jack Roslovic looks like he's going to start today's game on that fourth line with Matt Hendricks and Marco Dano. These next four games, though, I mean, where do you see Jack Roslovic going long-term here with the Jets? Is it dependent on how he plays in the next four games, or is there a good chance that once they get a little bit healthier, once they get Adam Lowry back, Mark Scheifele back in 3 weeks, that, you know, he's going to go back to the Moose and continue to dominate and be a point-per-game player?
I think there's a good chance he's going to go back. I think Paul Maurice already said that, you know, there's guys that are here that earned their positions in training camp and aren't going to lose them just because there was injuries. And Jack Roslovic he's a good player, obviously. He was great in the AHL. He was tearing it up. And then he comes up here. And don't forget, he's just a second-year player, which is a pretty impressive feat. But then, you know, he's going to have a pretty long career here in Winnipeg. I think he's going to be a big part of the Jets going forward next season for sure. But do you say that right now? I'm not so sure, because I don't know whether he has that value on the fourth line, obviously. And yet, where would you put him higher up in the lineup? Once Scheifele and Lowry are back, those top three lines were pretty darn good. And you're going to give him a chance to be pretty darn good again.
Now, Ted, I know you're not a doctor, so I'm not going to ask you for a medical diagnosis, but, you know, the Steve Mason concussion, how concerning is that for this team, considering it's his second one this season, and, you know, right now it's an indefinite period of time he's out for? And conversely, how happy do you think this team is right now that they didn't trade Michael Hutchinson and have him as an opportunity to be the backup for the time that Steve Mason is out?
Well, I think you almost answered your question there, Dave. It's pretty obvious that they are very concerned about the injury to Steve Mason. When you have one concussion, it's bad. When you have two in succession, it's alarming. We all remember what happened to Sidney Crosby when he had two in short succession. He was out an awfully long time. Steve Mason has had a very tough year for him. He didn't expect any of this to happen. He thought he was coming here to be a number one goalie. Started off terribly. Connor Hellebuck completely took the reins from him and ran with it and has had an excellent season, is going to the All-Star game. And then this happens to Mason. This injury has to be concerning for him. It's going to be really tough for him to come back and make an impact this season, because it's hard to get over a concussion in the first place. And secondly, at best, he's going to be a backup when he does come back. But to the second part of your question, what a great decision to keep that depth around with Michael Hutchinson and keep around a guy who was sour. He didn't want to be here in the minors at all. He was PO'd. He finally spoke yesterday. I never really agreed with his decision to not speak to the media at all, but he had his reasons, and they finally spoke yesterday, and he admitted, of course, he was PO'd. He didn't want to be down there, but he did. He channeled his anger in the right way, and he ended up doing something pretty darn special with it. 14-2-1, .942 save percentage. I mean, those numbers are absolutely ridiculous. And so now he has an opportunity to help the Winnipeg Jets. He was a really not a good player for the Winnipeg Jets last year. He was a poor backup. And then the Jets had to do almost the same thing that they're doing with him now. And they had to bring up Andrei Pavlik last year because they just weren't getting the goaltending, or the guy that was banished, they had to bring him up. Well, here's a situation where they've got injuries, and they need it. They need Michael Hutchinson. And what they really need from him now is for him to perform well at the NHL level, spell off Connor Hellebuyck a couple of times, and just offer what he has in the past. Because this is, again, a very important time, and he's going to be a part of it.
Ted, is it a coincidence that Flames head coach Glenn Gulletson threw his stick into the stands on Friday, January 5th, and the Flames have won 5 games in a row since then?
Well, according to Jim Rome, it's not a coincidence at all, I guess, because they had the Jim Rome show did a pretty big bit on Glenn Gulletson because of sort of this legend of throwing the stick and screaming expletives at the players. And that came after a win where he thought, well, we didn't play that great. Don't go thinking you've won the Stanley Cup already. You still got to practice. I guess it got their attention. Could it be a coincidence? Of course it could, but it's something that certainly we in the media love to look at and say, you know, there's something that was a potential turning point in the season. And the Flames are playing fantastic. I think they always thought that they were going to be a playoff team. I think a lot of people thought they were going to be a playoff team. They're young. They're fast. They can really play a good team game. They got a good goaltender in Mike Smith. They've got a lot of excellent defensemen. I think there's a lot about the Calgary Flames to like. And here, something has happened that could be that kind of legendary moment and the rallying point. So I think it's going to be very interesting. It'll be really interesting to see how the Flames do right here coming back after the break, because they know that this was not well timed for them when you're on a seven-game winning streak going in.
We'll find out how the Jets and the Flames do starting at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and then the Jets and the Canucks tomorrow night at 7 at Bell MTS Place. Ted, thanks for your time this morning. We'll see you tomorrow at the rink.
Always a pleasure, guys. See you then.
Take care. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun joins us on the program. When we come back, we look at the Jets' performance in 3-on-3 overtime, see if there's a strategic decision the Jets can make to improve their record. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Beating the Jets in OT, not much of an accomplishment this season. The Jets still winless when the game goes to 3-on-3. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, Drew, talking about, you know, coincidences.
Uh-huh.
After that game on January 2nd,
yes,
in which Eric Johnson scored the OT winner,
mm-hmm,
the Avalanche have won 5 games in a row,
yes,
including beating Columbus,
mm-hmm,
Minnesota,
again,
Dallas,
yes,
Anaheim,
uh-huh,
and San Jose.
Pretty good teams. Not
just
sure
saying,
how that...
They've been doing pretty well since that win over the Jets.
They have won 9 in a row. The Colorado Avalanche have 9 and 1 in their last 10. Certainly on fuego, on fire, if you will, in the NHL standings. Interesting article on theathletic.com by Murat, good friend of ours, you know, big fan of the program.
We could have Murat on the show.
Well, we can do that. You know, I bet you he'd be willing to even come on the show with us. But a good article talking about the Jets' struggles in 3-on-3 overtime.
You know, as a fellow writer, I got to admit, I love the way he writes.
That's good.
Yeah.
You're a fellow writer?
Well, I have a journalism diploma.
Yeah.
He's the closest thing we have to a journalist on the show.
It's pretty true. He's the closest equivalent. I believe. Didn't you win a national newspaper award, or you were nominated for a national newspaper award?
No.
It was a provincial award.
Rural.
No, it was a local award.
Rural. And I'm proud of that award.
As you should be.
If you ask Bill Redicott.
And Dave's uncle was in that article, actually.
It was an article about Dave's uncle.
Shout out to Yossel Manuk.
There you go. Anyways, Murat wrote about the Jets' 3-on-3 overtime strategy.
Dr. Yossel Manuk.
Yes. Thank you. Talking about how the Jets, basically to summarize the article, and it's an interesting read, and I suggest you read it at theathletic.com. You can even subscribe to The Athletic and support journalism that way.
If you're a sports fan and you're not subscribing to The Athletic, then, I mean, you're not doing it right.
And while you're at it, you should also subscribe to our 2 local newspapers to support local journalism in all its different formats.
Yep.
But the article pretty much says that the Jets are trying to maybe force the issue too much when it comes to 3-on-3 overtime, in that a lot of the Jets' opponents, if they cannot make a clean zone entry when it's 3-on-3 with momentum and with good spacing among the teammates, they're more inclined to circle back, clear the zone, and try over again, whereas the Jets don't do that enough. And the fact that they do that too little, the Jets sometimes will try and go 1-on-2 or 1-on-3 and really force the issue in 3-on-3 overtime when it might not be there. And Murat's point is the most important part of 3-on-3 overtime is possession of the puck.
Yep.
So even if you go, when you possess the puck, if you don't have the requisite numbers, if you don't have the setup proper to entering the opponent's zone, you're better off circling back and restarting as opposed to forcing the issue. Your thoughts on that? Is that something that the Jets and Paul Maurice philosophically need to change with the way they approach their 3-on-3 overtime?
Yeah, it's possible. And I think at this point, you know, you're leaving points on the table. You mentioned it's kind of dumbfounding that the Jets haven't won a game in overtime because, as far as I'm concerned, they're one of the most skilled teams in the league. And a player that I would like to see out there more at 3-on-3 overtime is Josh Morrissey, because I think Josh Morrissey is the Jets' best defensive defenseman. And you don't see Josh Morrissey out there enough. I don't know what his ice time has been in overtime, but I know they like to go with, you know, whether it's Dustin Byfuglien or Jacob Trouba or Tyler Myers on the back end. You're always going to see, you know, most likely one defenseman and two forwards. That's the way most teams go. It makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
And so for me, yeah, it's absolutely strategy. And I mean, this is definitely something the Jets work on. And I mean, I don't know this for a fact. I haven't talked to Paul Maurice or any of the members of the coaching staff about this, but I think they know it's a problem. And, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks back. You know, Connor Hellebuck, you know, was upset that they didn't get that extra point in the game against Colorado, giving up that goal with 10 seconds left. I mean, it was a beautiful shot by Eric Johnson, let's be honest. It wasn't Hellebuck's fault. But for me, I mean, it's a bit of a coin flip, Drew. I mean, Murat does a great example. If you haven't read the article, he looks at the game between the Jets and the Blue Jackets and how Josh Anderson, you know, gets the OT goal and what leads up to that, how the Jets had the puck in the Blue Jackets zone and kind of the way they were deploying their players. And I mean, let's be honest, guys. If you make one small mistake, a turnover in the offensive zone, that's coming back the other way, right, Dave? So, I mean, I'm not as worried about this overtime record, I think, as some are. And it's because the Jets have so many good, skilled, fast players that I think, you know, the next time they go into overtime, I wouldn't be surprised. And it would be different. You guys remember the Tampa Bay game back in December. I mean, the Jets could have easily won that game in overtime. I thought they were the better team. But, of course, Braden Point scored the winning goal and the Jets lost. So I think if you looked and broke down, you know, all the games this year in overtime, I think you could see opportunities for the Jets to win these games. I don't think it's that they're playing bad. I think it's that maybe they've been too aggressive, Dave. For me, that's really been the key for the Jets. I think they go for it maybe a little bit too early. And we've talked about this before on the show. You have to be patient. I mean, you have to set it up. You see teams oftentimes, if they don't like what they see, they'll take the puck back into the neutral zone, into their own zone.
Resetting.
Right. And the whole key in this is to create mismatches. If in 3-on-3 overtime, you're trying to create situations where you take one of the players out and you create a 2-on-1 situation and have some open space out there. That's what it's about. You have so much open space out there. So, again, I don't think it's a huge problem for me. I think the Jets are going to pick up some wins in overtime because they have the personnel, they have the goaltending. It's just so far, you know, it hasn't worked out. And, you know, Murat goes over some of the reasons why in his article. But for me, it's a combination of puck luck and you know, just circumstances, really.
Dave, in the article, Murat references reverses, which is sort of when you take the puck out of the zone and you restart and everything else. The Jets have done a total of 4 reverses in their time in 3-on-3 overtime this year. Their opponents have done more than double that with 9 reverses. It seems like it's something that Paul Maurice doesn't embrace as a strategic decision. He seems to be against the concept of reverses because it looks like all the other opponents are teaching that and using it as a fundamental part of their strategy in overtime. Is that something that the Jets maybe need to look into doing, adding that component to their overtime strategy and increasing their possession? They're badly getting outpossessed in 3-on-3 overtime. The Jets have had the puck for 10 minutes and 23 seconds. Their opponents, 12 minutes and 53 seconds.
Yeah, but hold on a second. I mean, you're talking about a couple minutes here and a small sample size.
Well, I mean, that's all
What are you talking about, 20 seconds per game?
Well, you're talking about 2.5 minutes over the 6 overtime periods that the Jets...
Yeah, so what is that, 20 or 30 seconds? I mean, that's like a shift.
Well, I'm just saying, that's what the numbers... I can't make up the numbers any differently.
I'm just saying, I don't think that those numbers... I don't think that it's as bad as maybe the record indicates those numbers being.
It's 20 fewer seconds per game than its opponents in three-on-three overtime.
That's a shift.
Yeah, it's a shift, fair enough. But, I mean, it's still...
It's something. I wouldn't say it's significant, though.
So you don't think that the Jets need to change their overtime strategy? That's what the article to some extent is talking, that the Jets need to change their overtime strategy. To some extent, it's also that they've had bad luck in overtime. But do you think that the Jets' strategy as currently employed is the most successful one the team could be employing when it comes to overtime?
Well, they haven't won a game in overtime, so obviously you can always change a strategy when it's not working.
Right.
But each team's strategy is going to be very similar. I think if you look at the 31 teams in the league, I don't think the strategy is going to change much. For me, it's all about zone entries. We talked about gaining the zone with speed and creating mismatches. And you see so many goals in overtime come on two-on-ones or, a defenseman is coming back, he falls down. We've seen the Jets fall victim to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think strategies are pretty similar from team to team. But I think, Murat points out well here in the article, certainly the Jets' possession numbers are not good. But I just don't know if necessarily that's the main reason. I think it's a combination of reasons.
Well, it's something at least to keep an eye on, as the Jets undoubtedly will play more 3-on-3 overtime games over the final 31 games of the season here. Just keep an eye on the Jets' strategy, something to watch for during 3-on-3 overtime. When we come back, John Mattis of Post Media is going to join us, look around the NHL, talk about what's going on throughout the league with John. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from Post Media, John Mattis joins us on the show. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. How's the Winnipeg weather these days?
It's above zero, to be perfectly honest with you, John. It's been a beautiful last few days here. Unseasonably warm is, I guess, the best way of putting it.
Yeah, John, it's slushy. Yeah. I need to get a car wash.
You're at that point already. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's necessarily going to last from now until springtime, but we'll take it for at least a few days.
Fair enough. Yeah, here was pretty polar vortex esque, we'll say, a few weeks ago. But now it's back to sort of normal temperatures. So I've come out of hibernation to talk to you guys.
Well, we appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning, John. Obviously, take a look around the NHL with you. We'll start in Toronto, as that's where you're based, of course. And the Leafs are a team that is struggling, that they're getting points by virtue of getting games into overtime, but they certainly aren't playing at a high level in regulation. And Freddie Anderson, the Leafs goaltender, sort of called out his teammates on Thursday night after the loss to the Philadelphia Flyers. Did you think that was something that should have been kept in-house, or were you okay with Freddie Anderson sort of blasting his teammates a bit in the media?
I was okay with it. I don't think he said anything too damning, for one. And also the way he said it came from a good place. Also, considering it's him and not, say, someone who is struggling, I think that gives him more credibility, too. He's probably been their MVP this year. And also just Freddie Anderson himself, he's a thoughtful guy. He's not going to just say something to say something. He normally doesn't make headlines. So I thought it was fine, and he had a point. I mean, this team's been kind of sputtering lately. There's been some adversity over the last few weeks or so. Just, a lot of criticism towards Mike Babcock, which doesn't seem to be a thing in his career in terms of the way that he handles, the playing style of this team and also the deployment, playing certain guys way too much, like a Leo Komarov or a Roman Polak, when there's been some discussion about how Austin Matthews isn't getting enough power play time, stuff like that, where fans and media are on his back. So there's that going on. You know, they're losing one goal games a lot, which, you know, there's some luck involved in that. But when you watch the replays, you go, you should have had that guy on, in terms of defensive positioning. And there's just a lot to pick at with this team, which, at times this season hasn't been the case. They've gone on rolls. And when you look at the roster on paper, you think this team should be contending or very close to contending. But here we are, and they're consistently being outshot. And it's one of those things where they could go on like a five-game winning streak and it could all be forgotten because, like I said, I think they are the real deal in terms of what they can offer and what type of team they are. But they're really mired in this sort of weird state of not figuring it out. And last year was a lot of, you know, sunshine and rainbows. Everything was, you know, happy, and now they've finally hit some sort of adversity. So I guess it's sort of one of those things where if you're a Leaf fan, you're happy that it's happening at this point in the season versus, say, the playoffs or right before the playoffs, but they got to get out of it sooner than later.
You know, John, sticking with the Leafs, and the Leafs are certainly not in danger of missing the playoffs. They're pretty much locked in to play the Boston Bruins in the first round. We know the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to win the division. And, you know, you mentioned that there are several problems with this team right now. Defensively, why do you think the Leafs have been struggling so much this season?
Well, I'll say that the Morgan Rielly-Ron Hainsey pairing, while a lot of people questioned it coming into the season because it just didn't, you know, jump off the page, that's been a very good pairing. And then from there, whether it's injuries, you know, Nikita Zaitsev's been out, and that's affected the second pairing, or whether it's been weird decisions by Babcock, like I alluded to before, playing Roman Polak over guys like Travis Dermott or guys like Connor Carrick. And you know, Connor Carrick's had his struggles too. So this team, aside from, you know, you can throw Jake Gardner in with Morgan Rielly, and Ron Hainsey, aside from those three guys, there's question marks. I wouldn't say that they're the worst defense corps in the league, but coming into the season, we go, that's their weakness, and it's showing now. The warts are showing now game to game. So, you know, maybe the deadline becomes a time where they try to pick up someone, even if it's, you know, a third-pairing defenseman, just to bring that level of skill or that level of dependability up, because as you guys know, it's very difficult to pick up, you know, a top four defenseman or a top six at the deadline. So I wonder if they just work around the edges with that defense corps and then, you know, refresh in the offseason, because it's just what they've assembled is just not working out, at least at this point in time.
John, at the beginning of the season, I think we would have known the answer to this question, but with the Vegas Golden Knights leading the Western Conference right now, do you think that they should be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline?
I think they should lean closer to a buyer, but I don't think they should look at their roster, look at where they are in the standings, which is very favorable, and think that they are one of the best teams in the league, at least long term. You know, everything has gone right for this team. And, you know, credit goes to George McPhee, the GM there, to Gerard Gallant, the coach there, and the entire staff for putting it together. And obviously the players for actually scoring goals and limiting goals on the other side of the ice. But I think they should stand pat because, you know, if they make the playoffs, which they almost most certainly are going to, that's a tremendous story in and of itself. And I don't think that they can lose sight of what this team was supposed to be. And it was a long-term project. And if they get caught up in sort of the hoopla, we'll call it, or the wins, I think that they're making a mistake if they're going after the marquee guys, and especially with who's out there. You can subscribe to this or not subscribe to this, but it seems like a pattern that Evander Kane can't fit into certain teams. You know, there's when he was in Winnipeg, there were problems. When he's in Buffalo, he's fighting players in practice. Like, I don't like speculating too much about sort of quote-unquote character issues, but if he's the main guy on the market, I don't know if you want to throw an outsider, we'll call it, into that dressing room in Vegas. And that goes for guys like Mike Green and Thomas Vanek. And you go down the list, it's like, you know, maybe they should just stand pat. Maybe they should just see where this takes them, this wild ride. And, you know, maybe if they have to make a decision, it's getting rid of a pending free agent that's just not working out for them, which is a very short list at this point.
Now, John, sticking with the trade deadline and standing pat, if you're Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello going back to the Leafs, what are you doing with James Van Riemsdyk? Are you holding on to him and then possibly re-signing him, or are you holding on to him and potentially losing him in the offseason as a UFA?
Yeah, that's the number one question in this market right now, because he's on pace for, I believe, his best season of his career, or close to it. He's going to score over 30 goals. He's been one of the better players in terms of producing offense consistently. And at the end of the day, though, I mean, James Van Riemsdyk is going to probably test the market, whether it's, you know, he's going to consult with the Leafs and see what they can offer, because I think that he does like playing in Toronto, but he does also want to get paid his correct amount. So it's tough. I really don't think that they're going to trade him. I think that they believe in their team to believe in them enough to try to make a deep playoff run, and selling one of your best forwards seems like a counterproductive move. But I guess I would put it this way. I would think that Lou Lamoriello, Brendan Shanahan, and Mike Babcock, who's always involved in those discussions, would at least be listening to offers. I would think, I don't have any inside info, but I would think, but they would, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, turn a blind eye to what's being offered, because this guy's been important to their success this year, and that it's very difficult to just trade a guy like that and hope that you can continue on the trajectory that they've been going on.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is with Post Media, covers the NHL. John, the New York Islanders, to me, are a fascinating case. They are currently out of a playoff spot, yet they have the John Tavares question, his pending unrestricted free agency, sort of hanging over the entire franchise. If you're the Islanders, can you make an argument that they should be buyers as we approach the trade deadline, to both try and get into the playoffs this year and maybe prove to John Tavares that they're changing the dynamic of the franchise in an effort to get him to sign a long-term deal with them?
I think they almost have to. That's how important this guy is to their organization. They have to do whatever they can in their power to convince him to stay, and I think he's probably already leaning towards staying already, but it's hard to really describe or put into words how impactful it would be if he left, what the roster would look like without John Tavares. I think he's always been an underrated MVP candidate. Like, if they had made the playoffs the last, you know, 10 years, I think he would have been climbing up the ranks in terms of the voting for the Hart. That's how important he is. And, you know, Matt Barzal and his success this year, I think, has already pushed the needle forward and already proven to Tavares that there is more here than what meets the eye, or what has been there in the past. So I think maybe some subtle moves, some moves that are smart for the short term but also the long term, because let's face it, Tavares isn't signing a 1-year deal. He's going to sign an 8-year deal probably with New York, or a 7-year deal with another team, those max deals. So you don't want to pull the trigger on something that's going to affect the future too much. But I think if you're making smart moves that are sort of win now but also win in the next couple of years, I think that can really benefit them as a team in general, and also the way that Tavares views the Islanders and their future.
John, earlier this week, Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times reported that Corey Crawford could miss the rest of the season with vertigo-like symptoms. And when you're Stan Bowman, if you're Stan Bowman, I should say, do you have to make a move, because Anton Forsberg and Jeff Glass are clearly not going to give you the same level of goaltending that you're used to with Crawford?
Yeah, the Blackhawks are in a very interesting situation. The Crawford injury, it sounds like it's probably the rest of the season. So you think, okay, this season is more or less, as you alluded to, those goaltenders are not going to hold down the fort, or you assume that they're not. So you think that this season is almost lost. And then you have to really judge the situation and think long and hard about where this organization is going with this core, because you have Kane, Taves, Seabrook, Keith. That old core, you include obviously Crawford because he's coming back next year presumably. And you have to really make a decision. Like, is this the time that we blow things up, or do we call this year a mulligan and just make some changes at the deadline, say trade a Patrick Sharp, traded Tommy Wingles, who are pending at UFAs and also who, let's face it, aren't really part of their core or part of their future. Like, I tend to lean towards not panicking. That's my sort of nature fantasy GMs or whatever you want to call it. If you have a strong core and you have a lot of money invested in them, I don't think it's easy to blow it up, first of all. And I also think that it's very difficult to get that core back. So you sort of have to make the changes around them and make it work somehow, whether that takes a year or two of sort of retooling. You just have to stick it out. Sort of like what the LA Kings are doing this year, where things looked kind of dire last year. They didn't make the playoffs. They weren't able to score goals. They just had terrible shooting percentage. They changed the way they played. Now they're looking like the Kings of old. So you wonder if the Blackhawks can sort of hold on tight to this rough stretch with no Crawford and with the wins not coming, and just sort of reset in the summer and hopefully next year with a few different players on the roster, they can do something.
You know, John, for a while it looked like the Tampa Bay Lightning were running away with the East, but the Boston Bruins are kind of hard charging, 7-0-3 in their last 10 games. Just how real is this Boston team, and why is nobody seeming to be talking about the Bruins right now?
I think they're quite real. I think it all starts with that line of Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand. Last year they destroyed the league in terms of puck possession, scoring chances. You go up and down the underlying numbers, and they were doing it. And I think this year they're actually scoring more goals. It's all sort of paying off. And then from there they have some good stories, whether it's Torey Krug coming into his own or Charlie McAvoy showing that he's probably going to be a number one defenseman in this league. I think, you know, if you're going to bet on that, you're probably going to win. And Chara has looked pretty good for a guy of his advanced age. So you go up and down the list of this team, and you know, I think they're a little top heavy. I think they have depth issues, and that might be something to address at the deadline. But the way that the East is shaking out, I think that it's Tampa, and then in the second tier, you can probably put a Washington, a Boston. And I don't know if the Leafs are in that second tier anymore, but the East is fairly wide open once you get past Tampa. And I think if you're the Bruins, you have to see that as an opportunity, as a window to really compete and stock up. And not necessarily that the window is going to close at the end of the season, but much like the Winnipeg Jets in the West, when you see an opportunity, you have to seize it.
John Mattis covers the NHL for Post Media. Good friend of the show. John, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Enjoy.
Our pleasure, John. When we come back, we talk about the Jets and the Flames. They'll do battle at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Preview that game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Pass up front, Tkachuk scores! Matthew Tkachuk got it back. It went off a leg, right back to Tkachuk. Goes top shelf over top of Darling. Power play goal, 4-0 Calgary.
Matthew Tkachuk scoring for the Calgary Flames. Jets fans hope they don't hear something similar this afternoon. A 2 o'clock puck drop in Calgary as the Jets and the Flames will do battle. Both teams coming off of their bye week, so they're back in action this afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Jets haven't seen the Flames, I believe, since the second game of the regular season, that game where the Jets jumped out to an early lead in Calgary, and then the Flames scored very quickly and ended up winning handily on home ice. That would be way back at the beginning of October when it looked like the Jets season was quickly going off the rails. We know how that things have turned around since then. The Flames were the team that were a little bit in the doldrums for a while. They've certainly busted out of that on the heels of that seven-game game winning streak to now move into a tie for second place in the Pacific Division, 10 points behind the Vegas Golden Knights and tied with the Sharks, with a game in hand. This Calgary team, it starts with Johnny Gaudreau. He's just having a fantastic season for the Flames, and so the Jets know that they have to key on him and keep his damage to a minimum as things get underway this afternoon in Calgary.
Yeah, Drew, and earlier we talked to Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun about Glenn Gullitson's explosion at practice. That was back on Friday, January 5th. And, you know, we talked about, you know, that was coming after a win. And the Flames had won two games in a row. It started off on New Year's Eve, winning in overtime against the Chicago Blackhawks. Seven wins in a row. And we mentioned, these are against good teams. These are against teams that are in playoff spots right now. So you're talking about the LA Kings, right? You're talking about the Flames have beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Sure, there have been some teams in there that weren't playoff teams. Carolina isn't a playoff team. Florida's not a playoff team. But you have some good teams in there. And even though Chicago might not be a playoff team right now, I mean, this is the defending Central Division winners. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, Johnny Gaudreau. And, I mean, you expect Johnny Gaudreau to lead this team offensively along with Sean Monahan. And for me, Drew, a guy that doesn't get talked about on that top line is Michael Ferland.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Ferland, we're very familiar with him. Of course, good Manitoba boy. This is a guy who has 19 goals.
Yeah.
I mean, 19 goals is a good season. I mean, what does that put him on pace for? 35, 36 goals right now? I mean, Michael Ferland is a guy, you know, that can play that physical element. And for me, I mean, that's the name of the game for the Flames. This is a team that can move the puck quickly, and it's a tough team. They're a physical team. So you have guys like Michael Ferland. You have guys like Troy Brouwer. Sam Bennett is a guy, you know, that he might be struggling a little bit offensively early on in his NHL career. He's a guy that can mix it up. We've seen him drop the gloves before. So, I mean, this is a team that has a lot of physicality, a lot of speed, and a lot of goal scoring. And for me, also, you have to mention that Mike Smith has given them a big improvement in goal.
Yeah.
The goaltending was not good for the Flames last year. And you can say whatever you want about Mike Smith. I mean, Mike Smith has played how many games now? 38?
38 games, 20 wins, 13 losses, 3 overtime losses, .924 save percentage, and a 2.46 goals against average. He's giving them the solid to a solid goaltending to maybe even above solid goaltending.
I think it's been above average. Yeah. I think those numbers are pretty darn good.
And that's what they didn't have last year.
Absolutely. The goaltending was not good enough last year, Dave. But, I mean, this defense, we know how good it is. I mean, we talked about it on Wednesday's show. Mark Giordano, his hit on Sebastian Aho. I mean, Dougie Hamilton, Mark Giordano, Dave, that's one of the best top pairs in the league. TJ Brody, Travis Hamonic. That's a top pair on many teams. That's the Flames' second pair. And even, you know, you go down the lineup, Brett Kulak and Michael Stone of Winnipeg, those are good defensemen. So, I mean, all around, this is a really good team. Is it the best team, a top team in the Western Conference? Maybe not. But 7 wins in a row, this is going to be a big test for the Jets today.
Yeah, I think we talked about the Jets, the Flames being a good defensive team for a long time, that they had a nice defensive core group. The interesting thing for me is that they've been rather pedestrian at home. I think they're just 12-11 in the Saddle Dome. So that to me is an opportunity for Winnipeg to make some hay there, because, you know, again, this is a team that's been extraordinarily good on the road at 13-5-4. But again, it's interesting how they haven't been able to get it done at on their home rink. So it's an opportunity, because, again, the nice thing for the NHL did this year as opposed to last year is that when teams are coming off their 5-game break, they coincide when you're returning. So the Jets are playing a team that's equally rested as they are, as opposed to last year, where you may be coming off your 5-day break and you're playing against a team that's currently in the midst of their season.
Sure.
And you know, it's kind of a disadvantage for the team coming off the break, because, sure, you're rested, but you're also a little rusty, whereas this instance, both teams are coming off their break and kind of at the same starting point. So I think it'll be a good test for the Jets. I think the Flames, again, as we talked about throughout the show, are probably it's a little unfortunate for them that they kind of came at the point of their hot streak. But they're still a very good team, and they've got a lot of weapons, and it's going to be it'll be a good little tilt this afternoon.
No, you're absolutely right, Dave, about the I'd expect I don't know if it will be a sloppy first period, but I'd expect a bit of a sluggish first period as both teams try and get their legs underneath them following the 5-day break. You know, the Flames are a little bit banged up as well. I mean, they're without Michael Frolik in their lineup. He's the big, you know, the big piece out of their team. I mean, we know that Jagr, that never worked out well, you know, in Calgary, and he's not.
Well, how many games has he played this year? 3?
Right. So, I mean, when they signed him, it obviously didn't work out because of his knee injury and everything else. So that just wasn't a you know, it was a reasonable guess, a reasonable contract to sign, and just things didn't work out with him. It's that top line. You mentioned it, Ezzie. It's the Goudreau, Monahan, Ferland line. You know, Matthew Tkachuk is, you know, Matthew, I mean, you sort of know what he is as a player at this point in time. He can score and everything else. He's going to agitate. He's going to get up in your face, and he's going to try and get under your skin. You know, he's got 13 goals. The Flames are top heavy when it comes to goal scorers. Goudreau's got 15. Sean Monahan's got 21. Tkachuk's got 13. And you mentioned Michael Ferland. He's got 19. After that, there's a drop off, you know, in terms of your goal scoring. So the Jets need to key on those sort of top line players of the Flames, and that's where the Flames are going to do the majority of their damage.
I agree. They're not a top offensive team, but I mean, you're still talking about a pretty good offensive team.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned some injuries. Christopher Stieg's been out of the lineup since November. I believe he's suffering from an upper body injury.
Yeah, a hip injury, if I'm not mistaken, for Versteeg, and it's going to cost him probably the rest of the year. And he was a Jets killer every time he's played against the Jets, going back to his days as a member of the Panthers.
Yeah, and so what you've seen is you've had an infusion of youth. Andrew Mangiapane and Mark Jankowski have come up from Stockton, Dave. And Jankowski was a guy who didn't start the season in the NHL, but he was playing really well for Stockton. Now he's centering that third line. And then Mangiapane's a guy that doesn't get as much ice time on the fourth line. But, you know, Sam Bennett is a guy, to me, that's always an interesting player, because I think that the Flames see him developing into that top six center. And you're right, Drew. I mean, there's talent and skill sprinkled throughout the lineup, but they're certainly not as an imposing of a team as some of the other teams the Jets have played, either in the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference. But again, for me, it's a very feisty team, a fast team. If you like analytics, the Flames are a top 10 possession team in the league as well. So there's a reason why they've won 7 games in a row. This isn't a mirage.
It's not a fluke, you're right. The Flames 18th in goals for with 129, 7th in goals against at 122, speaks to the impressive season that Mike Smith has been having. Power play and penalty kill, both a little bit below average, 19th on the power play, 18th in the penalty kill, and as you mentioned, as a 9th in Corsi 4 percentage at 52%.
Jankowski's a really interesting player. He's already got 8 goals on the season, former first-round pick.
Yeah, 21st overall, I believe.
Yep, in 2012, and he's a guy that's got really good size, really good speed, so you know, that's a line, too, that I would look out for this afternoon. That's a line that, you know, the Jets are certainly aware of with Bennett and Jankowski.
When we come back, George Johnson joins us. He covers the Calgary Flames for their team website. He'll talk about the Flames, the Jets' opponent, this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.